Hello and welcome to Brief Bits of History. I am your host, Denise Frisino. Today, we're going to talk about the hop king of the world. Now, I'm not talking hip hop here. I'm talking the good old fashioned hops with which that famous beer is brewed. You know, one of our greatest pioneers was Ezra Meeker. He actually took the Oregon Trail out here from Ohio with his family as a very, very small child. However, his life was absolutely fascinating, and he was known as the Hop King of the World. Now, how did that happen out here in the Washington state, specifically in the Puyallup region? Well, in about the 1860s, someone gave Ezra, through his brother, some hop starts. By about 1870, he had 500 acres of hop-growing land, and he was selling to such people as Henry Weinhart in Portland, Oregon. He actually had a branch in London. But then there was a blight on the crops, and he hit failure. As time progressed, and he penned several books over his time, as time progressed, he wrote one book called 70 Years of Progression in Washington State, which was published in 1921. Now, interestingly enough, that was during Prohibition. The 18th Amendment was actually signed January 29th, 1920, and it was repealed with the 21st Amendment December 5th, 1933. So you can see that Ezra's publishing of his book, 70 Years of Progress in Washington, came just at the very beginning of Prohibition. Now, Prohibition was a wild, wild time and basically a failure. Why did it come about? Well, the women's temperance movement had great input into it. If you've ever heard of a woman named Carrie Nation, she was the object of many cartoons, but she was a real life, strong, huge woman who would come in with her axe and literally destroy bars. People were terrified of her. You know, they had a slogan that said, "Save the women and children, get rid of the alcohol." Why? Well, men were spending their hard-earned money inside the bars, but you have to temper that also with the fact that water in a lot of cities wasn't any good. So they were drinking alcohol in lieu of water, thinking it was a better choice. And alcoholism was rampant. You know, they say that one of the only things positive that really came out of Prohibition was that there were less cases of cirrhosis of the liver. But of course, none of this can be proven about how much drinking there was or wasn't, because it all went underground. And of course, on top of the ground was the mafia. A lot of violence, a lot of murder. If you wanted anything to drink, if you couldn't find some place on the corner to purchase it, you might go to your barber shop, you might go to your drugstore, or you might go to a local friend's house who was a known runner or had connections. Now, Ezra's book is very interesting. And this is what he has to say in chapter 22 about Prohibition. Quote, "Any concentrated movement tending to empty the prisons, increase the bank deposits, provide better food and clothing for children, protect helpless mothers in the household, decrease business of the morgue, elevate the morals of a nation, protect the rising generation from the pitfalls and sin of dissipation, is entitled to be hailed as a harbinger of good tidings, a sign of progress second to none of the century. Such is Prohibition." So here, the irony of ironies is you have a man who made a fortune selling hops and then lost his fortune. He would go on to lose and make several fortunes in his lifetime. Was strongly against alcohol later in life. Well, of course, as we all know, Prohibition had many outcomes. And one of them was the fact that, oh, for women, the skirts got shorter. And drinking became the norm, or the excitement, sneaking into the speakeasies and downing a drink here or there. This was the origin of the cocktail. So they made the drinks beautiful. They put in fruit. They made fancy glasses. Some of the concoctions were added to disguise the bad flavor of the not so perfect alcohol that they were getting. Here in Washington State, you know, the Northwest region, specifically our state, was first developing much of its transportation on the numerous waterways. Lakes, canals, straits, and rivers were busy and bustling with fleets of boats carrying cargo and people. Thus, during Prohibition, having a home near the water made running illegal booze easier and at times much safer. You know, when researching Prohibition and bootlegging for my book, Whiskey Cove, I blindly fell upon treasures of information that at the time I wasn't fully realizing their value. Now, that was in the 1970s. I placed an advertisement in a local senior magazine and took my father, a journalist for the Seattle Post-Intelligencer, a Hearst paper, along with me to interview those who had responded to having knowledge of that wild time in history. Again, this was between about 1916 and 1933, when Prohibition became the law and rule, or at least attempted to rule, the entire United States. It's ironic that when the 21st Amendment was signed, Roosevelt, who was signing it, put down his pen and said, "This would be a good time for a beer." Well, can you imagine Germans without their beer, Italians without their wine? They hadn't imagined a world that would be that stringent without alcohol. You know, there's one story that always leaps to mind in my research. There was a woman who had moved into the Mount Baker district of Seattle area, and that's where one of our most notorious bootleggers lived. And there had a beautiful home right by the water. Remember, water was an easy way. Come in quick, quietly at night, no full moons. You don't want the moon showing off your boat and what you're doing. You want the darkness of night. Well, she was the third owner of the home. Her husband was away working in the legislature. And her son and a neighbor were downstairs messing around in the basement. Boys will be boys. And all of a sudden, they just came flying up the steps. And they said, "Mom, there's a room down there." She ignored them a bit and said, "Of course, Johnny, dear, of course there's a room down there." He says, "No, Mom, there's a room down there." So she thought it wise to tromp down the steps and see what she was going to find. Lo and behold, the boys had wrestled up against a wall and slammed into it so hard that a door sprung open, and behind it was a hidden room, a speakeasy, and a place for them to have kept their illegal booze. Now, speakeasies were not only plying the, you know, behind down alleyways and in hidden places, but they were also in homes. I've been in numerous speakeasies, and all it meant was it was a place without windows where you couldn't be seen from the outside, and the police didn't know the room existed. It was well hidden and secured. Prohibition was an absolutely amazing time. Having a drink was going against the law. Yet people still wanted their alcohol and would obviously do anything to get it. You know, in Seattle, another thing that we had going for us, our positioning, was Canada. Canada built more docks so our swift boats could go up, get the alcohol, the better alcohol, and bring it back down to through the San Juan Islands and down through our waterways, or laying 300 miles out, all the way down the coast to California. Prohibition did not stop drinking. It only made it, in a way, more fun and enticing because it was against the law. It was a failure. That's all that there was to it. And the Hop King, Ezra Meeker, came at a good time to grow his hops and then arrived at a good time to be against Prohibition. And ultimately, it was not a success, but we learned a lot during that period of time. And that is the way it was. Thank you for joining me. If you have any other questions, go to my webpage, www.denisefrisino.com, and look at some of my blogs. Thank you for joining me. I'm your host, Denise Frisino. This has been Brief Bits of History. Bye for now.